Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest is a blues guitar legend in the city of Chicago. Everyone knows the Chief. Eddie the Chief Clearwater has been a staple in Chicago blues since he moved up here from the South in the 50s. But it was the 1980 album, The Chief, that made his presence felt.
I wouldn't leave her guitar down. Well, ever since she left me, I've been drifting from town to town. You know the people come to hear me, they say they like my blues sound. All around they come to hear me, they say they like my blues sound. They make me feel real good, they make me wanna get on down. Go
ahead. Clearwater and his electric guitar are true blue Chicago. Eddie and others helped bring that electric guitar sound to the scene and also are credited with bringing the blues out of the south and west sides of Chicago as he set up shop as one of the stars that headlined weekly at the Kingston Mines in Lincoln Park. Clearwater has released several albums, toured the world over, and brought tourists from far and wide to sample his music and the music that gave this town its soundtrack. Clearwater just turned 83 years old, and with that, I say happy birthday, and I welcome Eddie the Chief Clearwater to the big table tonight. It's a pleasure and an honor to meet you, sir. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you very much.
And
it's good to be here.
Happy birthday. To have a conversation with you tonight is to have a conversation about Chicago blues. I have so many different questions about coming here from the South, about playing the clubs when you were a young man, about how you picked up the guitar. But why don't we start with what does the blues at the age 83, does it still mean the same to you as it did when you were a kid coming to Chicago in 1950?
It still means the same thing, I'll tell you the truth. It's about feeling and just knowing, enjoying the energy of the blues, because it's a very energetic thing to do, and it's just a good feeling inside. So the longer I do it, the better I feel. As long as I'm healthy, I figure, why not? Why not do it?
Yeah. You started in gospel music.
I started.
When you were a young kid, you're 13 years old, right?
13 years old, yeah, back in Mississippi.
Talk about the origins of learning the guitar and playing that music before you were even introduced to the blues.
Well, that's a dream I always had in my head. I want to play music for a living and write songs and stuff like that. So I just listened to some people like Lightnin' Hopkins, John Lee Hooker, and Muddy Waters, and then Chuck Berry later on. I said, hey, this is the way for me to go.
What made you come to Chicago? What was it about Chicago? What did you know about Chicago and the music that was here when you were in Alabama?
I had heard that Chicago had a blues reputation. I didn't know any of the players that was here personally, but I knew about them. People like Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, Jimmy Reed. They were all in Chicago at that time in the 50s playing blues every night from club to club. So I told my uncle Houston, I said, that's where I'd like to go. So he came to Chicago before I did. So he wrote me a letter in Birmingham saying, you said you wanted to pursue blues as a career, he said, if you come to Chicago, you'll get that opportunity, because there's people in Chicago that does blues every night for a living. So that's as good as I wanted to hear. I said, well, I wrote him back and said, send me a ticket. So he sent me a ticket on the Greyhound bus, September of 1950, a ticket for $15. So I got on the bus by myself. My grandparents gave me permission to go as long as my uncle looked after me. So that was always my best uncle anyway.
And at this point, if it's the early 50s, you're a teenager.
Yes.
So you learned the guitar upside down, left-handed.
Left-handed, yes. All backwards
at the age of 13. And you're ready to move to the big city of Chicago to try to be a professional musician?
You know, I had full confidence. I just had a lot of belief that I could make it work. It was scary coming to Chicago. A 15-year-old boy coming to Chicago with no one there except an uncle. It's real scary, but I'm going to take a chance. And my grandparents, they wished me luck and said, you're on your way, your uncle will look after you and get on your feet. So that's what I did. You know?
There's always talk in blues, and I've had different blues musicians on talking about what makes the Chicago blues sound distinct. And a lot of times they will point to the guitar, the electric guitar being a big staple of the Chicago blues sound. You know, you can talk to different parts of the country, have different sounds. It seems like a perfect fit for you? Was it a perfect fit to come to Chicago and have the, what you were learning and how you were playing the guitar in Alabama to come to Chicago and meld those two? Or did you have to change the style in which you were playing blues to a more Chicago style?
Oh, no. It sounded right for me, and it felt right. Because when I first walked in, like the Civio Club, Civio used to be on West Lake Street. I walked in there, and there were people like Howlin' Wolf playing there, and my uncle took me there, and I said, this is the atmosphere that I was looking for, just the way I had imagined it to be.
What do you remember about those clubs? Take us back, if you can, in your memory to walking in, the sounds, the smells, what did Club Civio's look like?
Well, it's just a very common-looking club, but the music is what took me over. You know, I said, well, the decor was not that great or anything, but it was just the music itself. It was just overtaking, so felt so energetic. Just the atmosphere of being there and see the reaction of the people when they hear the music. When Howlin' Wolf would get up and howl, I'm gonna howl the blues for you, and those women start yelling, "Whoa, Howlin' Wolf!" You know.
How long did it take you to get the confidence to say, hey, can I sit in? I'd like to play something. Talk about that first inclination to, actually, it's one thing to move to Chicago to play the blues, but when you're in that setting and you get a chance to actually get up on stage, it's probably pretty frightening.
Very frightening. The first person that gave me courage to go on stage, it was Magic Sam.
Wow.
Because before that, I would just go and listen. I would sit quiet in a corner someplace. That's how I first listened to Muddy at the 708 Club, 708 East 47th Street. I walked in. Well, I didn't walk in because I was only 18 years old, and there was a doorman at the door taking the money and checking IDs. So I called him when he was busy, and I snuck by him, and over in the corner of the club, there was a seat. I went there, I sat down, and I wouldn't order anything to drink. I just ordered a Coke because I knew they were going to ask me for my ID.
Right.
So I figured I can order a Coke and get away with it. They won't say anything as long as it's not alcohol. So I got my Coke, and I sat there the whole night listening to Muddy Waters. And I got blues religion that night. Believe me, I did, yes.
But it was Magic Sam that said, get up here.
Magic Sam gave me the courage to go on stage myself and pick up a guitar and play in front of people. Before that, I was just too shy. I couldn't do it.
Well, it's hard to believe seeing Eddie the Chief Clearwater play today, even today at the age of 83. You would never assume you to be a shy 18-year-old kid who didn't want to get up on stage. Eddie the Chief Clearwater, my guest in studio, Chicago blues legend, talk about upcoming project, a new LP that's coming out, and also the fact that for your birthday, the city of Westmont, city of Skokie, everybody making it Eddie Clearwater Day around Chicagoland. Eddie the Chief Clearwater, my guest at the big table tonight. We'll take a quick break, come back, continue the conversation. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight at the big table, Eddie the Chief Clearwater, blues legend in studio, talking about coming up here from Alabama, originally from Mississippi, and becoming a staple in the Chicago blues scene. Just turned 83 years old. We wish you a happy birthday, all of Chicago. And, you know, as we continue the conversation about your life in music, once you got acclimated to the stage and you started to play, talk about the Chicago blues scene of the 60s and the time when you start to, even the 50s, start to regularly perform. Where was it mostly taking place, the clubs, the sound? Talk about that time in your life.
Yes, most of the blues clubs at that time was on the west side and the south side of Chicago. Primarily on the west side, that's where a lot of gutted blues was played, like people like Otis Rush. And a little later on, Luther Allison, he came on a little bit later, but he came in strong.
Right.
So it would be the south side or the west side. That's where every night of the week they'd have a blues band playing someplace in Chicago. Like on 63rd Street, there was blues clubs all up and down 63rd Street.
Hmm.
You could go from one club right into the other, next door, like the Green Door and people like that. People like Muddy used to play there. And Earl Hooker, I used to go from place to place and just listen to
people. And there was a crowd for that.
Oh, yeah.
People would go out all
every night, all week long, yeah.
And how hard was it for you to book those places? Was there a lot of competition for young artists, blues artists that were coming up in the 50s and 60s that wanted to be on that stage?
Yeah, oh yeah, there was a lot of people because, see, people like Muddy and Wolf, they were the biggest names in the Chicago area at that time. And everyone else was just up and coming, but they were already named well-built and because of Chess Records. And they got contract with Chess Records and Little Walter and people like
that. So a lot of musicians were coming to Chicago because
of
just, Chess.
Yeah, because of the atmosphere. They said, go to Chicago, you can play blues and people will come out to listen to you every night. You know,
it's so interesting listening to your music all day today and different styles and different times of your career. One thing that really holds true is the guitar. And, you know, there's a lot of different music in Chicago blues and it could, or just in blues, piano and, you know, the singing and all that kind of stuff. And you do all the stuff that's on your records as well.
Oh, yes.
But that electric guitar, there's something about the blues electric guitar.
The electric guitar just speaks. That's the dominant in blues is the guitar, electric guitar. Very dominant. Like B.B. King, people like that, Lightning Hopkins. It had that goody sound.
Yeah, and it's... Listening to it today, and there was this moment where I wanted to ask you about the connection, the emotion, and the intimacy, because the blues is a very emotional music.
It is,
it's about struggle, and it's about putting your heart down your sleeve and talking
conditions
about
of life. Absolutely, that's what it's about.
But there's something about the electric guitar in that mix that is beautiful. It's this emotional. I can't think of another kind of music where it plays out just like this, where it almost feels like it's crying.
Yeah, it does.
Do you feel the same way about that?
Oh, I feel very much the same way. That's why I was so attracted to Earl Hooker's playing, because he was known as a monster, man. This guy would grab that guitar and he'd bring out sound that would just, all the musicians were saying, you got to hear Earl Hooker play. You got to hear Earl Hooker. That guy was very fantastic.
As a young musician who you taught yourself how to play upside down,
yes,
left-handed.
Self-taught. Yes.
As you developed yourself in the scene, became a player, a regular player in Chicago, how did you expand yourself as a musician? How did you push yourself to learn the instrument and continue to make that electric guitar sound part of your repertoire?
Well, I would just go out as much as possible and listen to different people play because... All of them, they have their own style, whether it's something minor or major, it's something different about each player's sound. It's like Elmo James, you know, he was known for the slide. You take all of this and you put it in your head and figure out, what can I get from that? So what you do, and then combine it with what I have from myself and I put it together. Like I listened to Chuck Berry, then I listened to Magic Sam, and I said, well, I could combine some of this because there's some licks in there that Chuck is playing and there's some licks Magic Sam is playing and I can put the lyrics together and try and come up with something, you know. So that's what I try to do.
The one thing about your career, and we're going to get into the records and all the touring and everything and talk about the new project as well. It's interesting that you are credited with bringing the blues from the west side of Chicago, from the south side, and bring it to the north side of Chicago, which is predominantly white, not necessarily where you would think that the blues would have a prominent space. But you became one of the pioneers, if you will, of coming to the north side, playing Kingston Mines, becoming a regular at Kingston Mines, and the college circuit in Lincoln Park around DePaul. Talk about the idea of getting out of your comfort zone on the west side of Chicago and playing on Halsted Street.
Right, okay, because I could always enjoy and I always liked listening to country music, country western. I'd always hear that as having a place within the blues. Somehow you can mix that and make it make sense, you know. So I always would try, every time I pick my guitar up, I would play some blues and I'd say, a Hank Williams tune. Your cheating heart will make you weep. You cry and cry, but cannot sleep, because sleep won't come the whole night through. Your cheating heart will tell on you. Then I started figuring out with some twangy licks that sounds like country western. And some of the club owners found out that I could play some blues like Hank Williams and Jerry Lee Lewis and stuff like that, Fats Domino. And I love all of that stuff. And That was just part of my game because I could hear it all the time in my
head. They were more inclined to have you come play at the clubs because it wasn't
that's
just
right,
a straight
because
blues.
Because
right.
of the diversity. They would say, well, he not only plays blues, he plays rock and roll. That's how I first got my introduction into like the western suburbs, the white areas and stuff. Because they said, he not only plays blues, he plays a little bit of country music and stuff. So I always associated it all as music. To me, it's all like the same family.
Well, know? I would have assumed, and maybe I assume incorrectly, but in the 60s, in the West Side clubs in Chicago, it's predominantly African-American crowd.
Right,
watching.
Yes.
But
at that
come
time.
To, but to come to Kingston Mines or come to the North Side, it becomes a predominantly white crowd.
Right.
So is it different in your eyes when you play a show and it might be a different audience in front of you?
The white people are more susceptible to blues than a black person would be because... The reason is a lot of black people take blues for granted because they say, well, oh, that's black music.
I've heard it. Or I grew up with it. I grew up with it in my house.
See what
like
I mean?
That, right?
Yeah,
so, right,
yeah.
Of course.
So they figured, see, like the best flowers could be the flowers in your own backyard, but you don't pay attention to them. You know why? Because you see them every day. You say, well, that's just some flowers. They look all right. But people from Europe and places like that,
yeah.
It took the British to... introduce Muddy Waters to the black audience in America.
Yeah, you're right.
They had to take it and say, or guess
give
what?
Give it to the Rolling Stones and
the
come
Rolling
back.
Stones,
yeah, right.
Yeah, the Beatles. Look at what you got. The Beatles did Chuck Berry songs and the Stones did Muddy Waters.
Wait, you know, as a blues musician,
black music.
When as a blues musician in Chicago, and you see that happening in the mid-60s where you have the Beatles and the Rolling Stones
right.
essentially taking blues riffs and turning it into pop songs that were on the charts.
Right.
How did you feel about that? Were you aware that that was happening at the time?
Oh, I was aware of it because I could hear it before it was ever announced. When I could hear the record, I could hear, oh, that's part of Hoochie Coochie Man. They put a lick that's in Hoochie Coochie Man. I could hear it. And then finally, people like Eric Clapton, they started to say, this song and that song, I got this from Muddy Waters. You know, what I give them, I really feel honored that they was honest enough. Like Stevie Ray Vaughan, you know, he'd tell anybody, well, Albert King, that's where I got my style from.
Yeah, you watched and listened to different people on stage, and you were able to combine it to make your style.
Exactly.
So it was similar in the same concept, but at least they had finally started to admit it.
Oh, yeah, right.
Eddie the Chief Clearwater, Chicago blues legend, in studio with me tonight. We're talking about his legendary career, and he's got some new music we're going to talk about in just a second. He just turned 83 years old. Both Westmont and Skokie gave him proclamations, Eddie the Chief Clearwater Day, both those towns. We'll take a quick break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back more with Eddie the Chief Clearwater in studio. Stay with us. Welcome back to the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest, Eddie the Chief Clearwater, Chicago blues legend. Several albums, toured the world over. We'll talk about all that. Also, as we're talking about, you know, was a pioneer in taking the blues out of the west and south sides of Chicago and bringing it to the north side. And you think about that, that's a big deal because a lot of the blues clubs that still stand today are on the north side of Chicago that are close by DePaul University. But you've had a career in pushing the boundaries of what was acceptable in clubs, breaking color barriers and things of that nature. I mean, Chicago has played that role in the suburbs. You talked about the western suburbs, but you also broke the color line in Round Lake, other places like that.
What I did when I first started appearing on the north side of Chicago in the western suburbs, I'd go in, they'd book me, I'd go in, I'd play a couple of blues songs, like, say, by Bobby Bubland, Jimmy Reed, B.B. King. I'd play a few blues songs, but I knew there was a lot of young white kids there. They want to get up and dance. So then I'd switch over to Chuck Berry.
Right.
Fats Domino. I like the way you walk.
You ever uncomfortable with being that kind of artist that would break the color barrier, that would go into places that had never had an African-American on stage or never allowed an African-American to be on stage?
I always thought, well, if the people get to hear it, young people, if they get to hear it, like they got to hear the blues, but they had never really heard it in a great sense because the radio at that time wasn't playing a lot of blues. So I would introduce a little bit of it. But then I knew the kids wanted to dance to something. Mm-hmm. And I knew they know who Chuck Berry is, you know. They know who Fats Domino is. They know who Little Richard is. Bop, bop, a loo, bop, ba lop, bam, bam, tootie, fruity. I would play that, and the kids would get up and dance, all the white kids. And they said, oh, this guy is good. He's not only playing blues, he's playing rock and roll. I was like, that's what I was brought up with, listening to people like Fats Domino, Chuck Berry, and I play that. And then I play little blues enough to let them know what I...
To give them a sample.
Yeah, exactly. Right, thank you. Right.
Well, you played throughout the 60s and 70s and even into the early 80s as a club regular in Chicago.
Right.
You played all the clubs you're talking about and all the places either on the north side, west side, south side. But it wasn't until the early 80s that you had success by putting out albums and started to get a following, not just here in Chicago, but around the country, around the world. Talk about the idea of transitioning from a Chicago regular, essentially a session musician playing in the clubs, to somebody whose name was out front and was known around the world.
Well, what happened, I was looking for a record company that would take me and record. So it was a little while before Alligator paid attention to me. They just thought I was just a Chuck Berry imitator at the beginning. So then when Jim O'Neill recorded the Chief album on Rooster Blues Records, Jim said, I want you to do some of the original blues songs on the album. I said, hey, that's what exactly what I want to do.
So I've been waiting for, right?
Right, exactly, the opportunity. So Jim introduced that album, and then Jim, he came back to me, and Jim said, if Bruce had heard you do this kind of stuff earlier, he would have recorded you way before now. He said he never realized that you were not just a Chuck Berry imitator.
Right.
He didn't realize that you have a blues side underneath that. Because, well, I came from the South, and I should
blues. And you're going and playing in these clubs and on the North Side and other places, so when the people come to watch you from Alligator or other places, you are doing the Chuck Berry and stuff because you're entertaining the audiences at times.
Right,
so
exactly.
They think you're a club act.
Exactly, right. They figure, well, it's just a club act. But then when we had the record party for the Chief album, we had it at Billy Mulligan's. So Jim, who shows up? Bruce Iglau.
Alligator Records, of course.
Yes. He picked the album up and he said, as much as I hate to admit it, but you made a damn good record. I said, well, thank you.
Eddie, obviously starts a huge career for you. You really look to the 80s and the 90s. Blues music in Chicago, and I would even say this country, started to dwindle in the way it was played on the radio and the sales for the albums, but at the same time exploded in Europe in the way that many blues musicians today, including yourself, can continue to tour Europe to major audiences, where if you tried to do the same kind of tour in the West Coast, it might not be the same.
We may not. You won't get the same reception.
How do you feel about that? For all the success you had and thinking back and looking at your discography, it's amazing how many albums that you've put out to be a star somewhere other than where you live.
Well, it's just a fact of life, like I just said about the flowers. You're less appreciated close to home. Not to bring anything religious into it, but Jesus, he only became a very famous person when he left his home. And then everybody said, oh, this guy Jesus, he's something magical. So that's the same thing happened when we go to Europe. It's like it took Europe to really bring out Jimi Hendrix. Because they just thought he was just a local player before that. So when he went to Britain, he came back a super, superstar.
You had your own club here, Reservation restaurant.
Blues,
in Wicker Park. I lived right around the corner for a while. I used to go in and see you, see the players that were in the back. Of course. You've also talked in this interview about 63rd Street, and there was a line of
all
of
and
blues
down
up and down.
The swing club.
And you talk about the West Side and Lake Street, these great addresses and clubs that are not around anymore.
Right, like the 1815 Club.
How does it make you feel to still be a blues performer, professional, as putting out records, getting named by cities for your birthday, to be in a city in which that history has eroded? In the way that it's not there anymore. It's really hard to find a blues history in the city of Chicago.
Right. Well, it's kind of sad. But I think my prediction is it's going to roll back around. I think it's going to escalate. Because a lot of people now are thinking of doing blues that never really attempted to do blues before. So I predict it's going to come back around. and it's going to escalate in a much bigger form. You know, just like Buddy Guy's Club, the Legends. Yeah,
that's one of the strongest clubs going.
One of the strongest
in the whole country.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
You know, I just wonder. And Pete and I were talking about. Do you think of places like Memphis, Austin, Texas, Nashville,
right,
where you can go down to the main drag and there will be bar after bar after bar playing live music, whatever music it might be, country music or
right,
blues. And you think about, why can't that be in Chicago? Why can't State Street between Adams and Van Buren, you know, be
right,
a line of clubs?
The designated
yeah,
area
do
for
you, do you think
blues
about
clubs.
That? Because there's been push to try and make blues designation Motor Road.
Right, on Motor Road, yeah, on South Michigan Avenue.
Yeah, and it's always kind of faltered.
Right, yeah.
What do you think about? What do you think about when you talk about the future? Can you see a Chicago in which the blues is accepted the way it was in the 50s and 60s when you came here?
Yeah, I can visualize it. I predict very strongly that it's going to come back. The blues is a great foundation for a lot of things, a lot of music here.
You know, as we wrap up, I think about the blues, you know, as you mentioned about the struggles of life, and you hear it in the music. You know, you're a great songwriter, and you hear it throughout the records I listened to today, this story of the parts of the human experience that don't necessarily get told as much, heartbreak and everything. And to me, I wonder about whether or not that art, the art of the blues, writing a blues song, will stay with us forever. Do you think
I think it will. That's what will stay around, the blues songs, because sooner or later, just like some of the songs that's out today that are real popular, songs like Further On Up the Road, people like Joe Bonamassa, the guitar player.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's doing a lot of black people's songs, which is good, because it's giving them some play and notoriety. So these songs are going to stay around, and new songs are going to be written, and I think they'll stay around.
But when I listen to pop music today, I hear Have a Fun Time all the time. I hear Let's Party every day. I hear a lot of stuff that is the antithesis of the blues song, which what I always was attracted to is the fact that you as a professional artist and someone who's on stage is able to tell us that you too have troubles, you too have issues, you too have frustrations.
Exactly.
That there's something great about being able to connect to an artist in this art form, that it's not all, let's have a good time, clap your hands.
Yeah, see, there's more to reality than that, you know. It's you take the good times with the bad. As Muddy Waters say, take the bitter with the sweet. That's good days and that's bad days. That's a fact of life. But you have to anticipate it and say, well, I have enough faith and I have enough strength that I can endure the bad time because I know there's better time. That's why I wrote the song, Good Times Are Coming.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let the bad times get you down.
Well, this was a good day. Any day you get a chance to sit down with Eddie the Chief Clearwater, a great blues legend here in Chicago. So many albums, so many songs. He's got a new project coming up, a new LP that should be out. When should the music
come? Hopefully by the end of this year, by the time we put all the pieces together.
I would be honored to have you back.
All new material.
All new material to talk more with Eddie the Chief Clearwater, a Chicago blues guitar legend. Eddie, appreciate you coming in. Happy birthday again. And,
thank you.
Thanks for being my guest.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Since you was 9 years old, I want you to come and go with me. I'm gonna show you some soul. I want you to cross over, baby. Get hip to these blues. Gonna play my blues here tonight. I ain't got no time to lose. Now that rock and roll music that you got up to your ear, you oughta put it down, baby. You oughta come over here. You oughta cross over, baby. Get hip to the blues. Gonna play my blues here tonight. I ain't got no time to lose. Now here we go now. Cross over.
Cross over. The big is blue.
Cross over, baby.
Cross over. The big is blue.
Cross over, baby.
Cross over. The big is blue.
Cross over, baby.
Cross over. The big is blue.
Gonna play my I ain't got